Hello.
Hi, we were talking about growing up in politics, and earlier we were talking about realizing reality, and also talked about black holes and white sources and how you need to connect the opposites. And there is a deeper level where you can see that when we grow up in humanity, we develop at different levels of consciousness. The development of the different levels of consciousness totally parallels what happens within our body in the cell communication. So in that sense, you can say that what happens in humanity is a reflection of what happens in humans. But that also means that the disease that we see in humans, we can also see in humanity. And whereas we can understand that the health in humans is based on the integrity of the integration of the cells within with each other, we can also see that criminality is the loss of integrity between people. So I would like to give an example of something of that process of disconnection and disconnectedness between people, based on the understanding that we have of what happens when cells no longer can coordinate, synchronize, and disconnect. So what I will be addressing is a relationship between autism, narcissism, psychopath, and sociopath, which are, say, different gears of disconnectedness, with different repercussions on the environment, because essentially, there is a relationship between autism and the individual, narcissism and the relationship, psychopath and the formation of groups, and sociopath and the functioning of humanity. So there are four scales of scope in which people can disconnect, but there are also four scopes in the scale where the disturbance in the interaction works out at the individual level, at the level of relationship, at the level of groups, or at the level of society. So what I'm trying to say is that there is no difference in principle, but that there is only a difference in scope, and that the cure for the problem is the same in all cases, but it is not at the same level. And that is for the simple reason that when we see the relationship in humanity of individuals, relationships, groups, and humanity, then essentially we are also doing with the relation, talking about the relationship of the individuals at the level of consciousness. Relationships taking place at the subconscious level, groups taking place at the unconscious level, and humanity taking place at the out of conscious level. So, before I can go into that, it is practical to recapitulate a bit of what happens in our body and how in our body we can see that we have four different levels of consciousness and that they actually operate, exist in four different dimensions, literally. And the best examples of that are the sleep cycle and the way we perceive the world around us, with, of course, the complement to that is how we express ideas in our body and put them in action to the world around us. In our body, we can see that we always operate in four different dimensions. Again and again, I point out that we exist in this sea of vibrations. And on the surface of the body, we have all kind of different sensory cells, which are responsive to different patterns of vibrations in the world around us. All of these sensory cells individually respond to a specific signal by a charge discharge. They do that in a point of their cellular functioning, and from that point it then goes into the line of the neuron, it goes into the plane of the plexus, it goes to the three dimensions of the brain. So we literally see that we have the connection between a point, a line, a plane, and a volume, which is the relation between zero-dimensional, one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional. It's important to realize that these four dimensions, they actually use a different kind of code in processing information. And it is really important to understand how different these different codes are, and that they really exist in different dimensions, because at the moment that we're dealing with diseases or psychosomatic or psychotropic diseases or social diseases or cultural diseases, we are all dealing with the same principles. But first we need to understand that the communication takes place at four levels, so that the diseases also will take place in four levels, which cannot be cross-connected, so there can be a bit more complexity. But the principle is very simple. It's always the relation between a point, a line, a plane, and a volume. The sensory cell can be wrong in what it perceives. There can be drugs affecting the sensory cell, so that the release of the charge discharge doesn't happen properly, because of a change of the chemistry of the body. The problem can be at the next level, in a neuron. There can be a neuronal disease of any kind, and that can be parasite, that can be electrical, that can be chemical. All of the disturbances that can affect a neuron will make a difference in the information propagation through that neuron. Likewise, when something happens at the neuronal level, which in the plexus also connects to the blood vessel levels and so on, then there is a third level where things can go wrong, in a greater level of complexity. Of course, once the information gets into the brain, which is, let's say, a system into itself, and then the sugar metabolism, for example, and other chemical effects will alter the perceptions in the brain. There's something, however, much more fundamental already taking place in this transition from information vibrations from the outside world to the inside world, because when the single cell on the surface of the body reacts to something, it does so by a charge discharge. In mathematics, that would be called a Dirac pulse, full spectrum of frequencies in one moment flashing out. It's like a little burst of everything. That triggers a change in the neuron, which, like a series of dominoes, propagates that signal from one end to the other, and does that as a Fourier code. So the Dirac pulse has been transformed into a Fourier code when it went from zero dimension to one dimensional. When it goes from one dimensional to two dimensional, the Fourier code is turned into a Moiré matrix in the neural plexus. And a Moiré system has an inbuilt capacity to amplify, to filter. The retina in our eye is an example of that. And once it is filtered there, it goes into the brain, which is, say, a three-dimensional composite of Moiré racks, and that builds up a hologram. So when we look at the relationship between you and the environment, that always happens in these four dimensions. I need to correlate that to what happens in the cell communication. I come back to that again and again. Because when the cells communicate, they do that with molecules, which are at the same time chemically reactive, which are at the same time an electromagnetic spectrum, which are thus carriers of information. So in the cell communication, we see that we have a physical, a chemical, an electromagnetic, and an information field, all integrated, all working together. And that's also why we can understand that the foundation of the cell communication, which is physical, chemical, electromagnetic, and an information field, is at the same time the basis for the physiology, which is physical, the psychology, which is, say, the information circulation, like the software in the hardware in our body. It's also the basis of the sociology, how we interact with each other on the basis of what we do internally in our body with our body. And it's also the basis of ecology, how together we interact with the planet. So that's the work of Bert Vervain. When you understand that cell communication operates at four levels, then you can also understand that physiology, psychology, sociology, and ecology are all aspects of the same principle. Coming back to the foundation of that, that health is based on the integrity of the integration of the feed forward and the feedback loops between the cells, then that cell communication, the feed forward and feedback loop between the cells, is not only the physiology and thus also the psychology, but it is also the basis of disease and of health and disease. When that feed forward and the feedback loop fits, when it matches up, the one cell feeds into the other and back again, and that can go on and on and on. It's a Möbius loop in which the two cells are connected, and that bond, it's like a Cooper pair in physics. The two cells are actually part of the same system because the two cells originated out of the cell that came before them. In cell division, the cell cycle of the original cell becomes two cell cycles which complement each other in the two cells that come out of the cell division by the cell multiplication. And the two cells are connected by having their cell cycles being complement of each other, which is also expressed in that feed-forward feedback loop between the cells, which essentially turns them into a Cooper pair, as physicists would call it. So all of these cells are connected, and that connectedness is the foundation of health. Chinese medicine and Bert Vervain described that when that feed forward and feedback loop does not match anymore, so for example the feed forward overshoots the capacity of the other cell, or the feedback loop overshoots the capacity of the first cell, then an adaptation is needed. And Hans Leiden described how the body can take care of that. But on the whole, you can see that when this feed forward and the feedback loop starts to deregulate, when it's no longer imbalanced, there will be the possibility of an overshoot on the one hand, but there will also be a possibility of an undershoot on the other hand. It's like two people throwing balls, one to the other, one to the other, one to the other, like ping pong or tennis. And as long as they aim the ball nicely towards each other, that game can go on and on and on, and health is the measure of the body. At the moment that they start to shoot too far or too near, then the cells can sort of overreach, or they need to fold in to be able to cope with what happened. They need to adapt in order to correct. So you have a direct relationship between health, adaptation, compensation, and decompensation. If you throw the ball to the other and the other can easily catch it, you can with great ease have that ball go up and down. And the feed forward and the feedback loop are closed. When you throw too hard or not hard enough, the other has to compensate. When the other does that too, you have to compensate. So you have to do more than just throw that ball. You have to actually position yourself to be able to throw that ball, catch that ball. So that's where you go from health to adaptation. That's extra work. There's more that is required. So in a way, you lose energy in that system. When you go to the critical level of compensation, then you could no longer stretch higher or jump lower to catch the ball. It's at the limit of what you can do. Or for the other, the same would hold. In a different example, you're leaning over to pick up something. You you put your weight on the chair that's next to you, so you use the chair to compensate for your movement. But that means that you are no longer in a healthy state of being. You're in a critical state of being. Anything that pulls away the chair from under you will make you fall over. And so in the cells too, anything that happens will make that in the critical compensation level, the game stops and decompensation sets in. The feed forward and the feedback no longer connect, they disconnect, the cells are no longer coupled, they discouple, and as a result a kind of tear operates within the system. And if that cannot be compensated from elsewhere within the system by compensation and correction, then this can lead to a breakdown of the system. An accumulation of breakdown points is what's called aging. I needed this description of what happens at the level of cell communication, because once you understand that requirement of connection between the feed forward and the feedback loop between the cells, and the difficulties in that connection, in that transition from health to adaptation to compensation to decompensation, decompensation is essentially the breakdown, then you can see that the same holds in the relationship between individuals. But individuals, we don't use the same terminology, because people have not yet realized that everything that happens within humanity also happens within our body. All of the interaction between humans are always based on the interaction between cells. So at some point people will realize that, at some point they'll use the same model for what happens in our body, what happens in humanity, and at that time the healing of the body will be applicable to the healing of humanity, and the other way around. So at the moment we don't have that, so I need to bridge that gap in understanding by simply showing that what happens in the feed-forward feedback cell connectedness at the cellular level also happens when people communicate. When one person communicates to the other communicates back. That also creates a feed-forward and a feedback cycle. But there too are the possibilities of a rupture between the connections. In the interaction between people, on the one hand we have exactly the same as that feed forward and the feedback between the cells, but on the other hand we have exactly the same as in that transition from the sensory cell to the neuron to the plexus to the brain. So when people communicate, they within them have the information come in, they need to process that within the body. That leads to a different state of the body, which needs to a different kind of understanding within them. On the basis of that new understanding, they initiate a new change, that initiates a new process, that initiates a new action. So there's four steps of the information going from the one to the other. There's four steps of the information being processed in the body, four steps to bring it back, and then there's four steps again to bring it to the other. So four by four by four, you already have the 16 components of, say, the zodiac, by which people then need to establish that circulation between them. And actually the zodiac is not only a representation of the organic process cycle, but also of the communicational process cycle between people. Once you understand that, then you can see that the interaction between people takes place by exactly the same principles as what we see in the information communication within the body at the organ level, where different organs all participate in cleaning the blood and feeding the blood so that the blood can feed the whole body. There too, when the communication breaks down, the body or the mind or both of them can break down. Again, principle of health, adaptation, compensation, decompensation. I'm bringing up these examples of the cell cycle, of the neuronal information intake cycle, of the organ cycle. You can add the sleep cycle, you can add the digestive cycle, they're all the same principle. It is that same principle, that same cycle that operates between people. at the moment that people can no longer in body, mind, soul and spirit connect to their environment, they somehow need to disconnect. And in that disconnection, they will need to compensate for the loss of integration within their environment. So that's where I can then go into this relationship between autists, narcissists, psychopaths and sociopaths. These are at different dimensions. So the scale is different, the significance is different, the meaning and the consequences are different. But the principle is same, that of disconnectedness. When you're in an environment, but your environment does not mirror what you're doing, say the feed forward and the feedback between you and the other people is not matching, then you will need to disconnect somehow. And autism is one of those cases where people have disconnected from people in their environment. Basically, they there is a general description that often there is a kind of distrust of the people in their environment because the people in their environment contradict themselves. So what is said at one moment is said the opposite at another moment, or one person says something and the other person says something else. So there is a conflict in the environment, or there's a conflict within other people, which leads to the decision in the individual that apparently it is not beneficial to communicate with other people, for the simple reason that what information comes back is self-contradictory. You cannot rely upon it, you cannot build upon it, so why would you take in that information, why would you listen to it? So in autism, there is a kind of disconnection, let's say a disinterest in what others think and do. There is still awareness of what others do, and there's still the realization of what others are doing, but there is not the feeling that it is necessary to interact with it. So it is as if you look through the reality through a glass pane and happily ignore it. And Jean-Pierre Garnier-Mallet was one of the people who studied time fields and looked into autism and realized that autists internally have a much faster mental processing rate. It's as if their computer clock cycle is much faster than that of other people, for the simple reason that they had disconnected from the environment and thus didn't need to slow down to what happens in the environment. So by their internal processes, they can go much quicker. It's the same with what happens when people start to meditate. So in that sense, you could say that an autist is somebody who learned to consciously meditate by withdrawing themselves from what happens to the environment. So they live in a kind of state of meditation, withdrawn from the environment around, a bit like a monk, but have a quicker processing of what happens. And so there are many examples of autists who in that way learn to process very rapidly. And Erik Engdahl is one of the autists who did two PhDs and then at some point realized that being an autist is perhaps only a limited aspect of what is possible. So he learned to reconnect to the environment and then was also able to describe how being an autist is different from being connected to the other people in that relational setting. Narcissism is a different form of disconnectedness, where the autist goes into an individuation and basically happily meditate within himself as a kind of monk in reality. The narcissist goes into a kind of self-reflection or reflection. There is a description that narcissists are the result of the same kind of unreliability of the other. But in this case, it is not so much that the others contradict themselves, but that there is a lack of contradiction with the other. And the general description is that it is the child that is ignored or the child that is adored. In both cases, there is no valid feedback on what a child is doing that does not suit the circumstances. So there is no corrective feedback, which means that what the others say is in that way meaningless, because it doesn't give a feeling of an interaction with another. What a parent gives is a kind of reflection, a bright mirror or a dark mirror. And the result is, as it is described, that the child learns to not define a suitable self-image, or specifically does not learn to redefine a self-image. Of course, if you don't have a self-image, you don't know how to redefine it. But in many cases, narcissists are people who have a very defined conviction about how things would be or should be, and they act out of that conviction, which is purely emotional, purely by reflex. There's no contextual relativity, so they are not able to relate to others with any capacity of moderating their relationship. So they cannot negotiate, they have outspoken opinions. They will act or react from emotions in a way. They learn that emotions is the kind of level what they work with, so they expect that from the other. When they don't get it, they sort of call for it and they try to invoke it. As a result, they are often quite competent in manipulating others to bring them to emotional levels where the others then often don't operate and don't navigate. So the narcissist is very often experienced as a disruptive factor in society, because all they do is in a way self-centered, and only provokes the other to serve their own needs. It's a bit, an emotional baby level of trying to find attention from others in a very specific manner. Narcissists can be very intelligent, they can be very outspoken. There are different brands of narcissism, but the foundation is still the same, that in the interaction, in the relationship with other people, there is a lack of balance in the interaction. It is a mirroring in which they basically use the other to see themselves or reflect on themselves. But there is no vision on a shared goal. They identify with their own goal and the other should serve that. They cannot imagine that between people there is a virtual common goal which both could join in on. So in that sense, it is another kind of selfishness. The psychopath is a different kind of selfishness, which also has to do with this disconnectedness. And it's intriguing that in the description of the psychopath, there is also a realization that psychopaths are often born as a psychopath to a mother who experienced stress during the pregnancy. There is a fundamental study by Hare on the nature of the psychopath, and the subtitle is Without Consciousness. There is no inner consciousness of the action of what's going on, and the story of the emergence of the psychopath, which can be found, is that when a mother is pregnant in a situation where she is experiencing inescapable stress, basically she does not have the social support that she needs. She does not have the ability to get out of that situation, and then as a result, her stress hormone levels in her body induce a shift in the relationship between the forebrain and the hindbrain in the fetus. So the fetus then has an active hindbrain. The hindbrain and the capacity to activate is fully developed, but the forebrain, with capacity to perceive, to sense the environment, is not tuned into that. So the psychopath is also described as a kind of bulldozer who is able to move mountains, to move out of the situation in which the mother existed during the pregnancy of the baby. So that with, let's say, blind force, the psychopath can very well sense what's going on in the environment, but is not inhibited by the information of the settings, does not experience that as a negative feedback, does not reduce activities as a consequence, but instead uses that as a kind of fuel to break through the boundaries of that setting. In the story of the mother living in a situation of stress, the child is then the bulldozer to help the mother escape from that setting. And as so often in reflex patterns, and all of these changes of personality are reflex-based patterns, then once it is turned off, on, it is difficult to turn it off. So once the psychopath has been geared to this level of a strong motor activity from the hindbrain and a kind of uninhibited sensitivity from the forebrain, then whatever situation they are in, they'll try to break through the boundaries. And that often means that they will try to achieve their goals, whatever they are, but because of the inhibition of the sensory system, they do not take into account what might be damaging to others. In a way, that is the compensation for the way the people around the pregnant mother were not supporting her. So in the way that they did not take her into account, then the baby doesn't take them into account. So the psychopath in that sense is a logical answer for the mother to find a solution for the situation that she could not resolve. And it's intriguing that Hare, Robert Hare, in his book on the psychopath, he came up in with a list of criteria for identifying psychopathic behavior of people, which is sort of this self-centeredness and the ignoring of others. And later it turned out that in Wall Street and corporate environments, the people who are at the top used that list to recruit other people at the top. So basically, they select people who are insensitive to the communication and needs of others, and who have a tendency to overrule the needs of others. And evidently, when whole Wall Street is operated by those kind of people, then you can imagine that Wall Street as a whole will overrule the rest of society. Which is then the step towards the sociopath, because the narcissist basically has behavior interacting in a one-to-one relationship. The psychopath has a similar kind of relationship, but it doesn't matter who the other is. There is greater bluntness in overruling others. And the sociopath has a similar kind of mindset, but let's say a kind of derogatory perspective to other people, as if other people are not actually people to be reckoned with. And in that sense, you can find that there's a lot of description of so-called elitist groups, and there are many religions or many cults or many communities or student clubs or societies where they have the notion that they are the elite people, that they are the chosen people, that they are the ones, and that other people just aren't that important. But that of course means that in humanity you suddenly have cells who think that they are better than other cells in the body. And if those cells don't have a larger encompassing perspective, then whatever they see or whatever they do will not be on the behalf of other cells. So there is a stark difference between leaders, who are people who develop from individual by relationship and understanding groups and realizing that all groups have the same kind of needs and that there are methods by which you can feed into those. There are other people who think that they are capable of leading other people by overruling people, and specifically by denying the needs or desires or even the wishes of other people. And those are then the people who are quite capable and willing to put down other people. So they're the ones that will build concentration camps, that will police forces, that will build armies, that will go and colonize other countries, or will go out and say that they need to educate the rest of the world because the world is ignorant, or even go out and say that other peoples or other animals don't have a soul. It is these kind of judgments which are indicative of the lack of understanding that all humans together form humanity, and that one individual is actually the complement of another individual. So in the social path, there is as if a vertical boundary between them and others, by which they think that they should need to walk over, trod over others. The psychopath is rather that they are like a bulldozer and will go through others as they desire. By the narcissist, it's more that they seek for an individual clash. And by the autist, it's that they prefer to withdraw from the contact with others. But in each case, the breakage or the rupture or the alienation between the one and the other is at the core of it all. It is just that it is in one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional or four-dimensional perspective that it is played out. So that is why I wish to address this notion of autism, narcissism, psychopath and the sociopath, because at that level you can see that the conflicts between humanities arise from these kind of alienations. Of course, they all have the counterpart of erroneous identifications, where people think that they are like the other, or the other has to be like them, or that everybody in the group needs to be uniform and uniformal, or in fact that all of humanity needs to behave in a specific way. And then you can see that different individuals create different groups, different cults, different corporations or different religions operating by such beliefs. But if the belief actually makes a separation between the one and the other, or if the belief tries to impose the ideology of the one onto the other, then you can always realize that these beliefs are in contradiction with the principles of freedom of choice, and as a result there are, let's say, a crime against life. So what I've been addressing here, a specific kind of loss of integration between humans at the individual level, at the relational level, at the group level, on the level of humanity. And once you understand that it is a loss of integration, then of course you can look for the principles of healing and identify the level of body, mind, soul and spirit where that kind of alienation exists, and then see in which other situations that occurs, and see what kind of remedy can be used to correct that, and as a result thereby help heal the rift that exists within humanity between humans. And of course, if you understand that, then you can get rid of the cause of wars, because war is in that sense a sociopathic disease. You can also get rid of erroneous politicians, because deceptive politicians are in that sense a psychopathic disease, this is. You can also help resolve all these conflicts between people, where they cannot interact with each other, cannot negotiate with each other, because that's just a generalized principle of the narcissistic conflict. And in that way you can also help understand what takes place in autism, which is say a more meditative state of being. As everything takes place in body and mind and soul and spirit, and this also takes place in conscious, subconscious, unconscious and out of conscious, and as it takes place in the physiology, the psychology, the sociology and the ecology, you can then see that the relationship between the individual in relationship in groups in the humanity are all part of that same understanding. And on that basis, it is then possible to help look for problems of alienation, like autism, narcissism, psychopath, and sociopath, and thereby to understand that it is a separation in a system where normally you would seek to find connectedness. And so that is where you then can apply the principles of healing. Essentially, there are two types of disease, as I mentioned before, the diseases of excess, the disease of deficit. And what you seek for is that the feed forward and the feedback cycles are restored. And then the four healthcare cultures of the four world cultures all have their solutions to provide. So that once we see that the diseases of the human are also seen as the diseases of humanity, then we can use the cures for the human also as the cures for humanity, and thereby have the ability to resolve these kind of issues.